the Commons, a podcast featuring researchers, innovators, artists, entrepreneurs, and community builders who are improving the human condition in your own backyard and around the globe. I'm your host, Tom Osha. The search for effective treatment and ultimately a cure for cancer has been at the forefront of the medical and scientific communities for more than 150 years. Although tumors have been found in Egyptian mummies dating back to 1500 BC, the real pursuit of cancer treatments began in 1863 with the uncovering of the cellular origins of cancer. Our understanding accelerated with the breaking of the genetic code and the discovery of the structure of DNA in the 1950s, and took a giant leap forward with the sequencing of the human genome in 2000. While treatments and the survival rate of most cancers has vastly improved, finding a way to inoculate humans against getting cancer, like we have done for other diseases, has proven to be an exceptionally incredibly complex challenge for several reasons. Number one, the heterogeneity of cancer itself. It's not a single disease, but rather a collection of diseases characterized by abnormal cell growth. Each type of cancer can vary widely in its molecular makeup, behavior, and response to treatment. This makes it difficult to develop a one-size-fits-all vaccine. Two, immune evasion. Cancer cells have evolved sophisticated mechanisms to evade detection and destruction by the immune system. They can suppress immune responses, create an immunosuppressive microenvironment, and even mimic normal cells to avoid being recognized as foreign by our immune system. Three, tolerance. The immune system is programmed to tolerate the body's own cells to prevent autoimmune reactions. Cancer cells, which arise from our own tissues, often exploit this tolerance to evade immune surveillance. Tumor heterogeneity. Within a single tumor, there can be significant genetic and phenotypic heterogeneity, meaning different parts of the tumor may have different characteristics and different responses to treatment. And finally, safety concerns. Cancer vaccines must be carefully designed to stimulate an immune response against cancer cells while minimizing harmful side effects. Finding the right balance between efficacy and safety is a critical consideration in any vaccine development. Now, despite these challenges, significant progress has been made in recent years. The development of immunotherapies such as checkpoint inhibitors and CAR T cell therapy, which harness the power of the immune system to target and destroy cancer cells. While these treatments are not traditional vaccines, they represent promising approaches to cancer immunotherapy and are improving the outcomes for many patients. Additionally, ongoing research into cancer vaccines continues, with the hope of eventually developing effective preventative and therapeutic vaccines for a wide range of cancers. My guest today, Marco Chacone, leads a team of brilliant minds in the biotech industry, tirelessly working to develop a next-generation cancer vaccine platform. This platform holds the promise of providing novel treatment options for a broad range of patients, transforming the landscape of cancer as we know it. Chacone may be best known as the founder and former chairman of Paragon Bioservices, a contract development and GMP manufacturing organization that specialized in process development of viral vectors for gene therapy. In May of 2019, Paragon was acquired by Catalent Pharma Solutions, a global CMO, for $1.2 billion. Now, Marco has turned his attention to Arazo Oncology, not just another biotech startup. It's a beacon of hope for millions around the world affected by the devastating disease of cancer. Their groundbreaking approach to cancer vaccines is nothing short of revolutionary, combining cutting-edge science with a deep understanding of the complexities of cancer biology. Throughout today's episode, we'll delve into Marco's personal journey, from the initial spark of inspiration to the groundbreaking research happening in their labs as we speak. Cancer is a formidable foe affecting millions of people worldwide and touching the lives of countless families, mine included. Yet despite decades of research and countless breakthroughs, there's still much ground to cover in the quest for effective treatments, and Marco will give us a great perspective on how far we've come and how far we have yet to go. My guest this morning is Marco Chacone. He is the founder and CEO of Arazu Oncology. Marco, welcome to the Commons.
Well, thank you, Tom. Wonderful to be here.
Just a moment ago, off air, we were talking about the Walt Whitman quote, "Be curious, not judgmental." You've always struck me as a very curious person, Marco. So tell me a little bit about your story.
Well, trained as a scientist, and I guess by his very nature, scientists are curious characters. From the trips to the hills or to the brooks in my native Costa Rica, to pulling animals and critters out of those ecosystems, and a little cruel, but you know, doing a little anatomical dissections, which my mother wasn't very happy about. But, and then I paved the way to a love for biology and the environment, animals and plants, minerals, all of it was my kind of gravitational force all throughout school years, all the way through grad school.
What was the force that brought you to the United States?
That's a very interesting one. I came to the U.S. chasing a pretty girl from the state of Ohio, whom I met when I was an exchange student, my last year of high school. So the pretty girl from Ohio has been my wife for 52 years now.
Wow, congratulations.
And it's been a wonderful adventure.
Wow, well, so the Commons has a lot of fans in Ohio, I do have to say, so. They'll be warmed by hearing that story. You recently had a great exit with Paragon Bioservices a few years ago. You're on to your new thing now, Arazu Bio and Arazu Oncology. So talk to me about what it was like starting Paragon and moving that all the way through maturity.
To put it succinctly, after grad school, with two little babies in tow, I needed to find something else other than what was and had been my passion all the time, which was the research bench. But that took me into a different direction. Found a position with the Department of Defense in a laboratory, stayed there for a couple of years, and after that, decided to do something more entrepreneurial and decided to set up a company that could do service for other folks. Initially, around the NIH has historically been known to contract out a lot of tasks. Eventually began to market services to pharmaceutical companies and biotech companies. And before long, we were cloning genes, expressing recombinant proteins, building viruses that subsequently have been successfully used for gene therapy purposes. Took a long time, but at some point in 2009, brought the company to the University of Maryland Biopark, and we began to experience very rapid growth after that. We became extremely good at developing and producing mainly two things, two areas, vaccines of all sorts and viral vectors for gene therapy, particularly AAV, so-called vectors that today are being used to treat all kinds of genetic type diseases, including blindness, deafness, with some reasonable success, all kinds of blood-related ailments like hemophilias, thalassemias, all kinds of other errors of metabolism. Anyway, so in 19, the company had become quite marketable, and it was acquired by Catalent Pharma, a multinational CRO, CDMO. And then when the transaction was executed in 19, I was ready to go back to my roots, go back to the bench.
And now I just saw your bench and one of your labs. Mm-hmm. And so talk to me a little bit about where Arazu Oncology is going. I know you just raised some money to continue moving forward your cancer vaccine platform.
Sure. Very exciting work that we're engaged in. So the technology behind Arazu Oncology emanates from the University of Maryland, Baltimore, from the Center of Vaccine Development. These folks, a large team of classical vaccinologists, one among them, Professor Jim Galen, developed this interesting technology. Basically, he developed an attenuated strain of Salmonella typhi, which had been used by the center, or at least the parental strain of that, had been used in clinical trials targeting a vaccine to control Salmonella typhi around the world. This attenuated strain of Salmonella was further modified by DNA engineering techniques to overexpress so-called outer membrane vesicles, the little blebs that come out of the bacteria, and further engineered to express antigens of interest on the surface of those tiny little nanoparticles. As a classical vaccinologist, that Jim Galen and his colleagues are, they were always targeting, or he was targeting, infectious diseases. But I said to Professor Galen, whom I have known for many years, look over a different horizon. It is about oncology too. And the bug doesn't know any better. So we can express antigens appear in tumors, create one immune response, which is what vaccines do. And hopefully, instead of killing an infectious disease, now we're killing tumor cells in solid tumors. Basically, that's the idea. We have some solid preclinical data, including efficacy, where we are obliterating CRC, colorectal cancer, in vivo, in mice. And we also have evidence that we are inducing a prolonged immune memory in those animals. Even if you challenge them much later, after they had been vaccinated, those animals that survive, those tumor cells, fail to grow entirely.
That had always been one of the questions I'd had was, people use the word vaccine. Most of us think about vaccines as an inoculation against getting cancer, but then it was vaccines that target cancer. Now that makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. You can both kill the cells as well as protect yourself against perhaps future attacks.
Or residual disease or metastatic disease. We don't have data supportive of that as of yet, but there is that potential. Classical vaccinologists probably will not want to call these interventions vaccines in a classical sense because they target infectious diseases. But so let's call them immunotherapy. However, I do see a future where there is potential for these interventions to be used prophylactically, in which case they do fit better the vaccine concept.
There's others claiming it to be going at the same objective through other means, right? I think mRNA and other of platforms. What makes these OMVs, these outer membrane vesicles, different from, let's say, mRNA?
We contend that the fact that what we're utilizing here is a derivative of what is a pathogen in nature is likely to create a very robust immune response. After all, we have been protected from infectious diseases by our immune system. So we're channeling the biology, if you will, to induce a solid immune response, which we have documented both T-cell and B-cell mediated responses.
Does this allow you to do it at a different cost than, let's say, some of these other approaches?
Absolutely. On the practical side of manufacturability, we're talking about here is a fermentation-based manufacturing scheme. We need to separate outer membrane vesicles from the bacteria themselves, but that is entirely doable. We have done it already in the laboratory, small fermenters, but nonetheless, it's totally doable. We don't require, in contrast to mRNA vaccines, an adjuvant, if you will. The vaccine is deemed to be self-adjuvanted, given its very nature. We don't need to create or conjugate a nanoparticle in the mRNA world. We don't need any of that. The outer membrane vesicles themselves become the immunogen, the vaccine itself. When you take into account these positives, if you will, at the end of the day, what you have is an impact on overall cost, which it will be a fraction of the cost associated with mRNA vaccines and, for that matter, other type of.
Also seems like a very elegant solution.
Well, thank you for that. It is. I think it's turning a natural phenomena into something practical and looking at nature for answers. The riddle has been solved. It's just that sometimes I think that we believe that we can make a better wheel instead of looking deeper around us for solutions that nature already has conquered.
So I love that, taking kind of a bio-design approach to things. Let me ask you, since I've got the advantage of having a leading expert sitting here with me, there's been a lot of talk about bio being challenged these days. Harder for startups to raise money. Bio seemed hot during COVID while they were rushing for new vaccines, but now some of that seems to have cooled.
But I'm not sure that that's really the case. I think bio has a long way to go, a lot of opportunity in this space. But I wanted to get your thoughts. Where do you see the industry going? Where do you see things like biodesign approaches coming back into the fold? And how are you in terms of where you think the world's going these days?
Well, Tom, thank you. You give me a bit too much credit. In a lifetime, my lifetime, I was 3 years old when Watson and Crick and Rosalind Franklin published their seminal paper on structure of DNA. And throughout these many decades, we have seen this revolution in thought before our eyes, leading eventually recombinant DNA technologies, great efforts and financing to discern the DNA composition in not only the human genome, but the genomes of other animals, species, all kinds of organisms, plants, and all these sort of things. But that is only an aspect of what this revolution has given us. That's the beginning. We're still very early on understanding epigenetic phenomena, meaning that milieu that is within every cell that really is the controller of what genes are activated or inhibited in any given circumstance. That is extremely early in its development. So in this 70 decades, 2017 was a wonderful benchmark. The majority of compounds approved by the FDA that year happened to be protein drugs. A lot of them monoclonal antibody drugs, but others as well. I don't think that that has shifted back to small molecules. Not to say that there is a large need for other technologies to continue, and certainly small molecules, development of small molecules, will continue to be an imperative. But I am bullish and I am optimistic that we have seen a beginning or a process that will continue into the future. And most definitely, bio is at the forefront.
Let me shift just a little bit as we are sitting here in the UMB Biopark. And these bioparks, or as Wexford Science and Technology calls them, knowledge communities, are really meant to be these engaged, activated kind of places. While maybe a little too much credit was given to Watson and Crick and not to Rosalind Franklin, thank you for pointing that out. The story is famous that they used to get together every afternoon in a pub called The Eagle, right, where they would talk about the day's research. And so talk a little bit about the importance of these places and knowledge communities where scientists can hang out, they can come out of their labs and bump into artists or musicians or other kinds of scientists or creators to help solve the kind of problems that are challenging our globe today.
Well, the old adage that no man, no woman is an island is absolutely true. The fact of the matter is that adjacent to any university, there is always a watering hole. I think in just about every profession is a gathering place where goodwill, collaboration, conversation. I do believe that when you put together people from different disciplines, people with different callings professionally, in the same room, in the same building, in the same effort, like a biopark or an innovation community, where there is programming, where you listen to things that are adjacently important to you, maybe not be directly important to you. But I always believe that people contribute from different walks of life, different disciplines, different scientific fields. And I tend to actually hire people with things that seem a little bit tangential to the number one set of efforts that the company has had in the past. But out of that, they bring different perspectives, different contributions. I've seen it in my own crew, and I will continue to practice that. But definitely, these innovation communities are absolutely, in my book, appropriate. They're critical. They nurture entrepreneurs, idea folks, interact with one another. And out of those collisions, you know, interesting things happen.
I got to ask you, where did the name Irazú come from?
Irazú is the name of a Costa Rican volcano. I grew up near the mountain. There are seven volcanoes in a very small country of Costa Rica. But this mountain blew top when I was a kid multiple times, and it left an impression. I had thought of science as building a mountain, little rock by little rock, and eventually the mountain occasionally, only every once in a blue moon, reveals its truth with great power, like a volcano. So it's a good name for a for a little company.
It's a great name for what is now a little company and may grow into its own volcanic force.
There you go.
Speaking of inspiration, last question. Who inspires you the most?
Who inspires me the most?
Yeah, who inspires you the most?
Well, giants in medicine, in science, maverick. People that refuse to toe the line or become another sheep.
Who's your favorite black sheep?
The guy that created this.
Holding up his iPhone.
Correct. Yep.
So Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs is a marvel of nature. But the likes of the more classical thinkers, Einstein, and on the literature side of things, you know, they're novelists. I mean, Dostoevsky comes to mind.
Okay, yeah. Have you seen the movie Oppenheimer?
I read the book Oppenheimer many years ago when it first came out. And subsequently, so the movie. Robert Oppenheimer is another maverick in his own right, for good or evil. That's a debate that will continue to rage forever, but a compelling figure for sure.
As are you. As are you.
Tom, put me in
that. You are a compelling figure because you have been on the Commons, and certainly we appreciate you sharing your story, your company, at your vision and your wisdom with us. My guest today has been Marco Chacon. He is the founder and the CEO of Arazu Biotechnology and Arazu Oncology. This is The Commons. I'm Tom Osha.
The Commons is a production of Wexford Science and Technology, LLC. Views and opinions expressed are solely those of the host and guest. To view additional material about today's episode, submit questions or story ideas, or learn more about Wexford Science and Technology, please visit www.wexfordscitech.com/thecommons. I'm your host, Tom Osha. Thanks for listening.